This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Weather State Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Sklina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Sklina.
And Matt, I should say host, but also realtors with Oakland Realty in downtown Vancouver. Today, an excellent episode that is timely and informative. We've got David Hutniak from Landlord BC.
He's the CEO of Landlord BC. As a lot of listeners will know, there's been a number of recent changes to the Residential Tenancy Act that have not actually been approved yet. And David was nice enough to literally pull his car over. This is how busy he is right now, I guess, meeting with people about these changes. Pull his car over and give us a half hour of his time where, and you weren't even here.
No.
I just said, David, let's go change by change. What are they changing? What does it look like? What is your take?
Yeah.
And we kind of break down every change that's coming or potentially coming, although the NDP is a majority, so presumably they're coming, changes to the Residential Tenancy Act that will be enacted soon.
There are so many implications from these tenancy changes. And I think this is, I'm going to listen back. What prompted this is a friend of the show, Natalie Genest.
Great friend of the show.
Yeah. She forwarded their media release.
Right.
Which Landlord BC's media release.
David Hutniak, we should say, past guest fan favorite.
Yes, he is. But anyways, it's an incredible media release. We should probably put some of it at least on our site, just outlining some of the changes, because I don't think people really understand how far reaching some of the implications will be for the market, but also for people that own tenanted properties, but also for tenants out there that are listening. There's a lot of changes that are coming. So it's going to be fantastic talking to David. I'm going to have to listen back. A couple things I'm thinking about though, Matt.
Yeah.
Before we get to anything else here.
Penny for your thoughts.
Yeah. Well, one is we've had some transactions happen recently with tenanted properties. And so the question becomes, these changes are coming in the summer. If you were to serve the 2 months notice for vacant possession to tenants today, time stamped what?
April 16th. April's a wash. You go May, June. So it's July 1st at this point.
But if it changes from 2 months to 4 months notice, which is one of the proposed changes, does the tenant get to stay for the 4 months, or is it based on when you served the notice?
Now
hang on.
Yes, please.
A lot of people would think, well, no, of course it depends on when you serve the notice.
If you serve the notice in April, why on earth would it not be under the rules as of today?
Yeah, but a lot of people are gearing up for the possibility that there's some uncertainty around this NDP rule. And what if it will be retroactive or not?
And I understand you've actually spoken to some pretty high profile real estate lawyers about this who agree.
I don't think anybody really feels certain in it.
Well, you know what? Markets love uncertainty.
Exactly.
As do tenants and potential buyers and everybody else.
Well, the tenants don't even know their rights. Right. Now, right. It's
no, I know, but just like, do I got 2 months? Do I got 4 months?
I know.
The buyer's like,
can I move in? I mean, I would imagine that it would be based on when notice was served, but you can imagine the mess that creates for trying to line up possessions as well as giving tenants proper notice and allowing for them to know their rights. So from that perspective, complicated.
You know, one thing I'm thinking about is, and again, this is, we talk, David and I talk a little bit about this, but this is strictly from a listing and selling properties perspective. It is going to be, there. Like, what percentage would you say are in Vancouver of listed properties? What would be the percentage of tenanted properties?
Depends on the price point and the property size, I would say. But like if we're condos downtown, a very high percentage.
Probably what, 40% you think?
Maybe. Maybe that high.
So in any event, selling one of these properties just got infinitely harder
if
unless you're selling to an investor.
Well, that's it. So say you have a property that is, you've had a tenant there for a long period of time and you haven't increased rent in any kind of meaningful way.
Or you haven't been able to.
And now you're going to sell the property. Now you need to find, so first of all, if it's an investor who doesn't want to occupy the property, but wants to keep the existing tenant, well, now you've got low rent. So they're probably going to look for an option where they can kind of balance out the
price. Yeah, they're going to look for at least market rent, right?
Yeah.
That's the challenge because you don't want to be feeding the property for the rest of your life.
Yeah. And so there's that. But now you've got to find also a buyer that wants to give 4 months notice. And that's actually going to be 5 months notice because think about it. Like most, you know, say you write and you
write today. Subjects. Let's remove subjects today. That's May, June, July, August. You're looking at a September 1 possession right now and it's April.
For a vacant possession. Yeah. So
that's right.
So now you need somebody who is an end user, but also has 5 months horizon on their when they want to move.
How many people do you work with that are out seriously shopping for real estate that
usually
are hoping for 6 months possession?
1 to 3 months. 1 to 3 months is
this will. So in my mind, there's a huge percentage of properties now that are going to be very tricky to sell.
Does that create an opportunity for smart money or smart buyers to grind on tenanted property? I mean, I'm just thinking right now, if you're a buyer and you have the time to go after a long close with in a low rent situation, I mean, that's a tough sell for anyone. Even if it's a great unit, you know, they've got to find someone now with that time horizon. But also, you know, you're not going to be competing with an investor.
No. Yeah, I mean, that to me, the market for a tenanted property just got a lot smaller. Let's just put it that way.
Interesting.
But before we get to David Hutniak, Adam, we have the MLA Newswire Weekly Headline, a pre-sale update brought to you by the MLA Canada Advisory Team. The headline this week, Adam: opportunistic time to be a buyer in the presale market.
Yeah, I love this. This is basically right now, time stamped April 16th, is a busy time in the presale market. And we've seen increased in competition in the presale market as developers in all markets bring new projects to compete against each other. And many of the projects are actually in the same submarkets in the Lower Mainland.
And they're competing against each other and they're competing against existing projects. And I think this is maybe what part of the opportunity is, as we've learned through these headlines in the past, it's been a fairly slow start to the year. There's existing inventory that's sitting, and now there's a number of new projects coming that is competing with that existing inventory. And what does that mean? That means incentives.
Yeah, and a relatively small buyer pool, right?
Exactly.
So, I mean, really what we're going to see is we're going to see developers increasing the incentives, trying to hit their financing requirements and sell enough units to actually begin construction.
What's a typical incentive in your mind in the presale market?
Like sub 2%. So 1 to 2% of the typical presale price, I guess.
And where do we think incentives are going here in the spring?
I think here's the thing. I think that this could result in reduced deposits of maybe 5 to 10% total.
We've already seen a number of 10%.
Yeah, and maybe 3 to 5% credits in some form, right? Whether that's like a decorating allowance or a price adjustment or, you know, a free locker or something like that, right? But there's various ways that the developers can offer incentives. Maybe you get a free Porsche.
That is something I've heard
of. I think that's a little more than, well, maybe not more than the
3%. No, that might not. We don't know.
But it still falls within.
3 to 5% incentive sounds pretty good. I mean, ultimately, the fact is spring 2024, there's ample choice and there's going to be increasing choice in the market for buyers and their negotiating power is growing in the spring 2024.
It definitely is. So not a bad time if you're a smart investor to be looking at presale.
Absolutely, Adam. If you like that, subscribe to the MLA Newswire, a daily email roundup of the latest real estate news and market insights. Visit mlacanada.com to subscribe now.
And Matt, we should also say we're sponsored by Scalina Real Estate, which is our real estate team in Vancouver. And today, another great listing, new listing on VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. which is where we feature all of our listings in addition to our real estate site.
That's right. Now, Adam, last week you mentioned the 2-bed in Mount Pleasant that went live this week. I want to mention a 1-bed in the West End that's coming on Monday. This is a concrete tower, top floor penthouse unit, southwest corner, 630 square feet, unobstructed English Bay and mountain views. And when I say unobstructed, this is when you sit on the couch and it looks like you're basically sitting on the water. It is unreal views, probably some of the best views in the city. 2201 1251 Cardero. It is at Vancouver Real Estate Podcast on Monday. So wait till Monday. Go to check it out at vancouverrealestatepodcast.com. And while you're there, Adam, hit sell with us.
Yeah, sell with us. You get the sold plan, our step-by-step guide for getting top dollar in the shortest amount of time for your home. It's evergreen. You can keep it on file when you're ready to sell.
It is the most downloaded document. It's the most downloaded document we've ever produced.
It is, absolutely. And without further ado, Matt, let's cut to our conversation with David Hutniak from Landlord BC. This is a great conversation and you're going to learn a lot about these changes to the Residential Tenancy Act.
Enjoy.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly 4 decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior 1-bedroom all the way to 3-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior 1-beds to 3-beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life. Okay, so we're here with David Hutniak, CEO of Landlord BC. How you doing, David?
I'm good, Matt. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for taking the time. As I understand, a busy moment for you at Landlord BC.
Yes, these are busy times for sure.
Well, maybe before we get into the meat of the subject we had invited you on to talk about, which is the government proposed changes to the Residential Tenancy Act. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and Landlord BC?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I've been CEO of Landlord BC for almost 10 years, come July 1st, actually. And our organization is a member-driven association, basically representing owners and managers of rental housing. We're all very focused on educating landlords so they understand their rights and responsibilities. And advocacy on behalf of our members and really the broader industry with all levels of government, frankly, to ensure that we have a strong rental housing ecosystem. You know, we represent landlords and there's lots of always sort of demonization, unfortunately. We happen to believe that the vast majority of them are really good folks and provide important housing. And so, you know, that's also an important part of what we try to do here is just make sure the public understands the importance of the service we provide.
Fantastic. You know, just thinking about, you know, I was talking to somebody this morning, maybe I'll frame it this way. And it seems like the provincial government is not scared to make fairly big moves right now when it comes to housing, generally speaking. What, David, would your scorecard be for the province, the NDP government, the provincial government on BC's rental housing over the last couple of years?
Well, I mean, the scorecard in the context of, you know, everything they've done to, you know, position the creation of more supply, rental housing in particular, I mean, you know, they deserve a ton of credit. I mean, Minister Kallan and obviously you know, in collaboration with Premier Eby, who's, you know, heavily invested in the housing, on the housing file. I mean, they have really put forward some, you know, very innovative ideas. The manner in which they've sort of gone after municipalities, I think was welcomed by us and many other stakeholders. And some of us said they should have gone further, but really their leadership is not just within the province, but or Canada, it's really North American wide. So tons of credit to the good work they're doing on that front. In the context of sort of, you know, from a legislative perspective, in terms of just day-to-day landlording and providing rental housing, we knew that when they came into power in 2017, that there were changes were going to happen. And we have an excellent relationship with them. We worked closely with them ever since they came into power with Selena Robinson when she was housing minister, and Premier Eby, and now Minister Kwan. And we have lots of respect personally, and certainly I'm pretty confident in saying that they have a lot of respect for our organization. But, you know, I think we've run into frustration, and really, you know, the announcement April 2nd was kind of almost a tipping point for many of our members, in the sense that, you know, we're in a situation here where, like, literally, and this is from many of our members, death by a thousand cuts, in the sense that there's just seems to be an endless stream of legislative and regulatory changes. And the frustrating part is that, you know, when they make these changes, it's for the whole sector, even though, you know, they acknowledge the vast majority of landlords are good, but they make these changes and they affect every landlord. And there's consequences to that. And the big one is that it discourages people from being landlords at a time when we need more of them and they want supply. So if I'm a rental developer, I see all these other positive things they're doing to encourage supply, but I'm going to look at what is the legislative environment for me as a landlord. And when you see all these changes, it creates so much uncertainty. And I know this because I talk to rental developers. You know, they start saying, geez, is this their jurisdiction, despite all the other positive things they're doing? And from a legislative perspective as a landlord, which I will be when I finish that building, I don't know if this is the right place to build rental. And there's a disconnect here, I think, you know, that was really sort of exacerbated based on the announcements last April 2nd.
Well, I'd love to get into kind of the details here. You know, I'm thinking probably the easiest way to do this, David, is I just have a list of the changes. Maybe I'll just put one to you. And if you want to kind of unpack what it means for landlords and tenants, and give your thoughts on, you know, whether or not it's good policy and potentially some of the unintended consequences, I guess, of these policies. Okay, so number one, this is an interesting one I've seen talked a lot about. So no rent increases for the addition of a human that's under 18 in a rental unit. Can you kind of unpack, like, this is something that I've never even heard of as being an issue. Can you talk a little bit about what this is all about?
Sure. Yeah, very quickly. I mean, there was lots of media attention, and rightfully so, frankly, when a landlord basically increased rent $600 a month for a newborn in a rental unit. And, you know, the way we advise our members is, you know, first of all, we feel that they should have that right to increase rent if there's an additional occupant. But, you know, there's a reasonable approach to this, and there's an unreasonable approach to this. And really, you know, this certainly got lots of media attention, got the minister's attention, and this was the response. We were consulted, and we said, listen, we understand your concern. We're not happy that this kind of an increase occurred. So let's put some kind of a cap on it. That would not be unreasonable. So, but the landlord has a right, and that right should be respected, to increase rent if there's more occupants, there's more wear and tear, et cetera, et cetera. We were expecting this, but we were very surprised when it came out with no rent increase for any additional occupant up to age 19. And, you know, like I said, it was a total surprise to see that. Now, I will say we've had some clarification since from them, although we haven't, you know, seen this in writing. The what they'd clarified is that there, if the additional occupant was there at the beginning of the tenancy, then you will not be able to increase rent. However, if the additional occupant moved into the unit after the initial tenancy, so maybe 6 months, a year, 2 years later, at the time they turn 19, the landlord would be able to increase rent. Now, so that is, you know, in that respect, that's more, you know, acceptable, I guess, to us. But still, we need more clarification on that in terms of, well, what is there any limits on that increase, et cetera. But basically, yeah, I mean, when it first came up, the way it was presented, that was like hugely punitive. And really, fact of the matter is, we have more people living in a unit, there's going to be more damage. And as a landlord, you should be allowed to, you know, charge additional rent to compensate you for that circumstance.
Mm-hmm. So just so I understand, I'm just thinking of a hypothetical situation here. You have a suite that where there's a couple living there, and one of them has two kids from a previous relationship, and you rent the suite to the two adults. If I understand correctly, you know, there's a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old moving in. There's no ability for the landlord to change the terms of the lease until those kids are 19.
Well, no, actually, it's a little worse than that. If they come in at the beginning of the lease, as it reads right now, and again, we're looking for more clarification. If they came in with the parents at the beginning of the lease, as it reads right now, the landlord would not be able to increase the rent as long as those two kids were in there, even if they were beyond age 19. However, if, you know, the same circumstance you just described, those two kids came in, you know, 6, 12, 2 years afterwards into the unit, that is after the beginning of the tenancy, at age 19, the landlord would be able to charge additional rent once they hit 19.
Right.
So this is the issue is, are they there in the unit at the beginning of the tenancy or mid-tenancy before age 19? But again, this is what we understand right now. And I'm a little reticent to go through too much detail of this because we don't have all the details and we're continuing to, you know, to press for clarification.
Okay. The second change is increasing the amount of time a landlord must occupy a unit after an eviction from, if they're using it for personal use, from 6 to 12 months. Good policy, bad policy thoughts?
Well, okay. I think it's I'm going to tie it in with the other one that you're going to jump to eventually, which is the additional notice required for personal use.
Right.
So right now it's 2 months. That's changing to 4 months. Okay. Which is very problematic from our perspective in the sense that right now, pretty much every one of those situations is disputed. And by the time it gets to the RTB, it could be, you know, with the 2 months notice and a couple months or more to get it through RTB, it was like a 4 or 5 months time period that's passed, which we view as plenty of time for a tenant to find new accommodation. So when this issue was broached with us, that they were concerned about personal use, you know, bad faith evictions, you know, we totally acknowledge that there have been a steady increase, and we've seen it through RTB stats, a steady increase in the, I will say, abuse of this provision, which is really unfortunate. But our position was that the 2 months is reasonable, particularly recognizing the additional time it takes to get through the dispute resolution process, which pretty much always happens. So our suggestion actually was, okay, instead of making it only 6 months, make the occupancy 12 months. We think that's definitely a 12 month versus 6 will definitely indicate a more that this is truly in good faith, that this person is seriously looking for personal use. And we also suggested that, you know, then perhaps the compensation, the penalty might even be looked at and make it, you know, something higher. But our point was the right to do this has to be retained, and the moving from 2 to 4 months is just not necessary. And unfortunately, at this juncture, they disagreed with us.
So if I understand, it sounds like from your perspective, increasing that time where, so a landlord decides I'm moving back into my suite that's currently rented, in order to do that and do that following the rules that the Residential Tenancy Act is laying out from 6 months. They have to live there for 6 months after the eviction. Moving that to 12 months is fine. It's actually, the more challenging is giving that 2 to 4 months notice. So, and just to put it into context for everybody, currently, if you're moving back in, you have to provide 2 months notice and then 1 month free rent, right? The last month is generally just not paid, but that's going to move from 2 months to 4 months. So that's the more problematic change that's on the books or coming.
Yeah. And I think, you know, anybody selling real estate, I think, you know, something about that.
Yes.
I mean, certainly that's going to, you know, negatively impact commercial retail transactions, you know, people who are trying to sell their homes, et cetera. And that was something that we had pointed out to them as well. But, you know, but also more importantly, we were looking at it just from a pure landlord perspective. And, you know, again, the 12 months, I mean, if someone is, you know, legitimately utilizing this provision, you know, seeking personal use, 6 months, 12 months is not going to make any difference. But I think it gives, should give the government and renters more confidence that it's a genuine intention to move into the unit or a family member into the unit.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakwin Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakwin, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakwin.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
You know, I would say from our perspective, selling real estate, at least, this seems like it's very, the consequence will be punitive in terms of transaction, potentially transaction volume, but also price point. Because the buyer is looking at, say, three units that they're potentially interested in, and one they have to wait, you know, especially if it's, say, March 3rd, and so March is a wash, and then it's April, May, June, July, they're looking at August. Like, most people aren't buying with the intent of moving in close to 6 months later, right? So that, I think the interest in a tenanted unit, it drops quite significantly in my mind, thinking about how most buyers are operating in the market currently.
Well, I would suspect you're right. I think that's kind of the psyche of buyers. I mean, you know, they've made a decision, they want to buy a unit and they want to live in it. You know, that's going to be their home. They're looking for their path of least resistance, right?
Mm-hmm. The same reason why a lot of end users aren't looking at presale, because they're not wanting to move in a year or two or three. They're looking for the next couple months.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on to the next point. So prohibiting evictions for personal occupancy in purpose-built rental buildings with five or more rental units. Good policy, bad policy? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, we have huge concerns about this one. And we met with just to, again, seek further clarification on this. You know, we were curious as to, you know, how often is this even happening? Like, what stats were basically
right
to feel that this is necessary. Yeah, this is really punitive. I mean, in the sense that, you know, we have many examples within our own membership. Speaking with one member, he has owned a three-story walk-up for many, many, many years. He and his spouse live in one of the units and have for decades up on the third floor. He has never, ever evicted anyone in that building. I forget how many units. I think it's like five or six units.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. But he's, you know, he's in his 70s. He's reaching the point here where he said, you know, mobility issues, what have you. And this part of the plan was, okay, at some point in time here in the couple of 3 years, he and his wife are going to want to move into a unit on the main floor. So to you know, deal with their own personal situation. That gentleman now is not going to be able to do that. He will not be able to claim use of another unit for personal use, despite, you know, never revisiting any before this. But this was, he's lived in this building for decades. And so this is the thing. I mean, it's just, there's other, you know, other situations as well. Now I'm certainly, you know, in the conversations we've had, there have been situations identified to us where, unfortunately, you know, some landlords have felt that, you know, this is a great way to you know, remove long tenure tenants, to put somebody new in there and jack up rents.
Mm-hmm.
It's not happening. But the thing is, and here's the other position that we've advanced to the province on more than one occasion, well before April 2nd announcements, is that within the Residential Tenancy Act, within the Residential Tenancy Branch, they have legislation and authority. They actually have a special unit that can take action against bad actors, both renters and landlords. As the unit is the compliance and enforcement unit, they have the authority to apply significant administrative penalties. They have the authority to publish the names of the bad actors who've been given these administrative penalties. Our view is that good, bad actors should be caught, they should be fined, they should be shamed publicly. And that's both bad actor landlords and bad actor tenants. It's that it's those extremes that are ruining it for everybody else. The totally irresponsible tenants ruin it for good tenants who are the vast majority, and similarly for landlords. And you see, so they have the tools. And really, it goes back to my earlier comment, like these blanket changes that affect the entire sector diminish, you know, the risk or increase the risk reward imbalance, diminish the opportunity. And we're so dependent on that secondary market. We need secondary market landlords.
Mm-hmm.
More and more of them are saying, why am I doing this? It's not worth it. I'm getting out of it. And we've seen that within our own membership, Matt. And more importantly, there's all these people sitting on the sidelines in the secondary market. When they see this, and you know, why would they even contemplate becoming a landlord? So this is the challenge. And I understand that, you know, the government is looking to protect renters. Totally get that. We care about renters as well. But you can't, it's just not sustainable to continue to try and help renters while harming landlords. It makes no sense.
You know, one thing that strikes me is in terms of just how policy is come up with, like the additional minors one strikes me as like particularly egregious. That, you know, when I read this, I was like, oh, I didn't even think of this as an issue. I'd never heard of this. And then it's like, oh, well, there was a big media story where, you know, yep, a $600 increase got a lot of people fired up, and now we're all dealing with the consequences. It strikes me as not.
Yeah, but it could have been solved very easily. Okay, if they felt the need to address it. And like our suggestion was, okay, if you feel the need to address it, put some cap on how much you can increase the rent for an additional occupant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 5%, I don't know, whatever. You know, come up with a reasonable number that's fair to both parties. That would have solved the problem.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I feel like there's just, especially in the, well, what you say in the secondary market, I'm just thinking, you know, I live in East Van, where a lot of people I interact with have basement suites, basically. And I know it's like increasingly just, why am I, it's too dangerous to rent this out. So yeah, definitely hear you. I did want to get, I know you're short on time here. There was two other changes that I did want to touch on. One is increasing the amount of notice for tenants to challenge an eviction from 15 to 30 days. So currently they have 15 days to challenge. They're increasing that time to 30. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, this is a small change. we're fine with that.
Okay. And last, if I read correctly, there's going to be a web portal set up where if there's any and all evictions in BC, we'll have to go through, landlords will have to submit them through a web portal.
But that's not quite accurate.
So okay.
It's specific to personal use evictions.
Oh, okay.
For secondary market landlords. So it does not include the purpose-built rental ones. Okay. So if you've got a master condo basement suite, you're going to have to go to this portal and basically there's a twofold, threefold probably objective here. First one is, you know, I mean, many landlords maybe don't even really understand the legislation. So this portal is going to explain to them the legislation. There's actually going to be a bit of a checklist to say, you know, is this your situation? Have you done this? Blah, blah, blah. And mm-hmm. they say, okay, you don't qualify for this personal use eviction. And if it says, yes, you do, well, then you basically, it's going to give you a form to use so that there's consistency in how this is done. So we don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I guess, you know, it's certainly going to allow the province to collect some data that they don't currently have. I guess, you know, again, I guess different people have different opinions on that. You know, from our perspective, I don't know that we're overly concerned about that. And like I said, I think the core objective is probably pretty reasonable and you know, will be helpful in the broader context of this issue. I guess, you know, from our perspective, it's anytime you have a change like this and it's for something specific, the cynics and us say, will this be used elsewhere, you know? So right. That's something that we're obviously watching and you know, we'll be paying close attention to it. They've given no indication that that's the intention, but, you know, stuff creeps in, as I'm sure you well know. So, but by and large, I think that's probably going to be okay.
And I guess it might not be clear, as they just announced this pretty recently, but so there's going to be a checklist. Do you need actual approval from the province to move forward? And I'm just thinking of this specifically from a timeline, you know, having dealt with, you know, trying to get applications passed at the city and other places recently and facing just like an insane wait time. Is there going to be a component where it has to be signed off on by somebody, or is it just simply submitting the document and then going on your way?
Yeah, that's our understanding at this juncture. I don't think they're trying to insert themselves in, you know, with arbitrators, et cetera.
Perfect.
At this juncture.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good news.
They have enough on their plate, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
But having said that, I mean, I do want to say something. I mean, Minister Kahlon in the press conference, you know, pointed out the improvement at RTB, et cetera, the big investment they've made. You know, absolutely. I mean, the turnaround time for hearings and some of the other changes that they're making, that $15.6 million that he put into the RTB is being put to good use. There's still lots of room for improvement, but, you know, our members are getting quicker access to justice, so are tenants. So, you know, I do want to, you know, give them the minister recognition for that.
Fantastic. Well, maybe we'll leave it there, David. If people want to, I do want to point out, you did send out an email outlining your positions on this. It was super useful. If people want to learn more about Landlord BC and find out more about what you're doing and get on that list, how do they do?
Yeah, I mean, our website is landlordbc.ca. So go to our website. Actually, the press release you're referring to, your listeners can find it in our blog. It's posted in our blog. And you know, we're very active on social media, on Twitter, X, whatever it's called, and LinkedIn and Instagram, et cetera. But yeah, thank you for mentioning the press release. It's a great piece of information, landlordbc.ca. The tabs at the top, see news and blog, I think, is one of the tabs, and your listeners will find it there. And I hope they do look at it. And they can also learn about how to become members of Landlord BC through the website.
Okay, well, thanks again for your time, David. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, man. Nice talking to you. Bye-bye.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with CEO of Landlord BC, David Hutniak.
Yeah, Matt, really wish I would have been able to be there for that. Unfortunately, I missed it. I did do a little bit of digging on this my own. And of course, I read the media release that was put out by Landlord BC, which is phenomenal. Again, we should put that in the show notes or on our site. Matt, what was the biggest takeaway for you?
You know, I feel like if you listen to David, and of course he represents Landlord BC, his response is like logical and measured. And he points out like the NDP government's done a lot of good things. They've consulted with Landlord BC, but a lot of these proposed changes are just misdirected.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, I guess it is what it is right now. I suspect they're all going through, but
we'll see.
Yeah, we'll have to see.
And if you have any questions about that, of course, feel free to reach out. Matt, I should also say that if you want to learn more about this episode or any of our other previous episodes, you should check out our site, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
That's right, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com, where all things real estate related live and all things commercial real estate related live as well, with the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. Head over there for things like the back catalog, where it's searchable now. You can search for certain topics, evergreen topics going back to 2016. We've done Livewire, which is our weekly mailer where you get VIP presale access, stats, different types of stats, sales ratios in neighborhoods if you want to dig down. We also have, of course, private client services.
Yeah, Matt. And if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Just click buy with us and we will set up a free account. Best way to monitor the market. And what a time to monitor the market.
Oh.
And really also, if you want to be monitoring where what you own, so your house or your condo, your townhouse, call. We can set up a very specific search to make sure that you know what your neighbors are selling for.
Absolutely. That's the number one goal of everyone out there, I am sure. If you want to do that, talk about that or anything else, give me a shout, 778-847-2854 or matt@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or adam@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we got that Kokomo line, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Well, have a great week. I got to tell you, next week, you are not going to want to miss our episode with the man himself.
Ben Smith?
Ben Smith.
We're going Ben Smith.
He is CEO of
Avesdo,
which if you're in the industry, you know Avesdo. But man, Ben did not disappoint. Came in from Whistler, blew the tops of our heads right off.
And, guns blazing.
It's a fantastic episode. So stay tuned.
Absolutely. Have a good week.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.